Now the race for freedom is on in earnest. With Joan Gregory at the controls, the stolen Euclidean submarine is driving at full speed for the surface of the ocean. And that full speed is terrific. The submarine is capable of making over 40 miles an hour underwater. And added to this is the change in water pressure, which aids in shooting the boat straight up, almost as fast as a bullet shot out of a gun. Jerry, Mrs. Gregory, and the captain are excited by this ride and perhaps a little nervous. But they appear to be quite comfortable as they sit in their swinging steel chairs, securely fastened with safety belts. Joan is giving them some last-minute instructions as the submarine nears the surface.
As we prepare to level off near the surface, you will all be subjected to a sudden change of direction and of position. Do not allow yourselves to relax in those chairs. Brace your feet and hands firmly and remain rigidly a part of the structure of this submarine until I order otherwise.
Okay, Joan. I'll hang on to everything.
Aren't we in danger of bursting out of the water with such a force as to strain this boat to the breaking point?
Well, I think so. After all, you can't rush straight up through 9,000 feet of water and shoot out into the air without some action.
We will not leave the water entirely. I shall level off at 10 fathoms, and the remaining water will act as a cushion, breaking our rise gradually until we reach 6 fathoms. We will then proceed at that level.
Well, the air pressure inside this thing won't change, and if we can keep from getting thrown out of these steel chairs, I guess we'll still be here when we come out on top.
We are not coming out on top, and you know it.
Jerry meant when we level off, Joan.
We have no time for further discussion now. We are nearly to 10 fathoms. Hold your station. Brace yourselves well, and do not move until I give you permission.
Aye, aye, skipper. I think I can speak.
You just did, Jerry.
Oh, then I can.
Well, Jerry, I too am surprised to learn that I can.
That was about the wildest bit of sailing I've ever gone through. Are we safely leveled off at 6 fathoms now?
We are, and proceeding along our course to Los Angeles.
Hey, we're not riding any too well.
That's to be expected, isn't it, Joan, with that stern section off?
Yes, Captain Bradford. Our sailing will be very rough at all times now. The submarine is hard to control without the stern stabilizing fin.
We're certainly flopping around like goldfish in a bowl, but we seem to be making good time.
The vibration is not as great at this speed as it would be at a lower rate.
Then, for heaven's sake, don't slow down.
Are you uncomfortable, Mother?
I've really been more at ease a number of times, Joan, but I can stand it if the rest of you can.
When I think that we're getting away from that island, I can't imagine anything I couldn't stand.
That goes for me, too. Hey, Joan, how about using our radio now?
It would not be advisable. I hope that G-47 and Thales will suppose this boat to be destroyed. And in their excitement, it is barely possible the scientists in the transmission chambers on Euclidea have failed to note our movement on their prism reflectors.
Well, I don't think those Euclideans ever miss anything.
They will probably locate us within a very short time.
But they won't be able to reach us with anything, will they, Joan?
Not to my knowledge. Though it is quite possible that G-47 did not let me see everything there was to be seen on Euclidea. There were secret chambers where only a few of the greatest scientists went.
What about this man who succeeded in getting to Johnson at our radio set, Thales? What would he be doing in America?
Acting as a Euclidean spy and learning what new developments in science were being used.
Would he be in constant communication with the island?
To be sure he would.
But how could he send messages to them? He'd have to have a radio set somewhere in the States, and his message would be picked up all over the world.
He would be operating on a frequency which no worldly station could pick up, as you call it, Jerry.
Is that going on all the time, all over the world?
Euclidea has many agents, that I know, and their reports come in a constant stream to the island. But it is most unusual for a scientist as great as Thales to leave the island. Such work is usually delegated to minor scientists.
Hmm. Looks like old G-47 figures we're pretty big stuff.
Big stuff?
Jerry is off on one of his non-English speaking tours. But he meant that we must be important enemies if Thales would personally set about to make trouble for us.
What do you suppose he could have done to Johnson?
Probably nothing at all. Certainly he will not have harmed him.
What makes you so sure of that?
Thales would know of some way to keep Mr. Johnson quiet for some time without hurting him. It is a strict policy with G-47. To have his agents refrain from creating disturbances.
Well, I'll bet he didn't take that radio set away from Johnson without creating something. I saw Johnson once myself, and he's a pretty husky-looking fellow.
I think you'll find you're mistaken this time, Joan.
In what way, Mother?
Johnson would protect us with his life if necessary. And he would have to put up a struggle before turning that radio set over to an agent of Euclidia.
That's right, Joan.
I imagine that Johnson and Thales have never seen each other.
Oh,
well,
don't come
on. You will all remain silent.
No,
I said it,
Joan,
you will all remain silent.
Well,
thank you. I will attempt to explain.
I wish you would.
We heard Johnson's voice over the radio, and then the reception became very poor. The radio sounded as if it had been knocked over or broken or something.
Yes, and then Johnson said the danger threatened him and that the radio had been tampered with.
There's no other way to figure it, Joan. Thales was standing right over Johnson when he sent that message.
I know you are wrong, and I will prove it.
Well, you'll sure have to. Hey, hold this thing still.
That was a bad one.
Oh, it felt as if the boat were turning around.
We did waver slightly from our true axis course.
Wave slightly? Huh. I get tossed around like a canoe in a storm, and we wave slightly.
We are riding easily now, Jerry.
Well, go on with your explanation about Johnson and Thales.
Johnson did not say that danger threatened him. He said danger threatens our plan.
Why, yes, Joan, that's true.
And furthermore, Johnson did not sound as if he were engaging in a struggle. The radio was becoming uncertain, but Johnson's voice quality or his relation to the microphone did not change.
Say, I guess it didn't at that.
You're right so far, Joan. Go on.
You have progressed far enough with your own experiments, Captain Bradford, to realize that it would be a very simple matter to place a destructive solvent in Johnson's radio. A solvent which would be released and flow through the set, quickly ruining it.
Yes, that wouldn't be hard. And a clever man could find a chance to get into the radio room and do that.
But if Thales wasn't there with Johnson, how could he release this solvent just at the right moment to interrupt Johnson's message to us?
Yeah, that's what I'd like to know. Why, he might have planted that stuff in the radio hours before it was used. And Johnson could have sent plenty of other messages.
Agreed. But I believe that Thales was listening constantly to Johnson's station at his own powerful equipment not far off. And when Johnson was talking to us, Thales allowed him to talk just long enough to trace the beam to our exact location and report that to Euclidia, which would take very few seconds. Then he would cut in on Johnson's wavelength, reverse his powerful beam, and release the destructive material he had placed in your set at Los Angeles.
Why, Joan, that's fantastic. Reversing a radio beam to destroy a set?
Euclidians have done it often successfully.
Boy, that's the best one yet.
Yes, but it's also one of the easiest ones to perform. Don't forget that explosives are set off by radio and daily experiments all over the world.
I'm not questioning the Euclidians' ability to do this, but we've had so many of these experiences that it seems almost more than a person can stand.
Oh, cheer up, Mrs. Gregory. We'll catch this fellow Thales when we get back home.
What is the population of Los Angeles?
Well, with Hollywood and the suburban communities, it's roughly 2 million.
Then your chances of laying hands on Thales are 1 in 2 million, if he is in Los Angeles.
You know, there must be plenty of easy jobs in this world. Why do we always pick all the hard ones?
I like hard jobs, Jerry. They're the most interesting. And after you make good on something difficult, you may honestly feel that you've really accomplished something.
Yes, and we've sure done that. Only a few short weeks ago, we left Los Angeles in search of Joan. And now Joan is skippering us back at the controls of a stolen Euclidean submarine.
This will be considered an important adventure in your world, then?
It better be. I want to see my picture on page one of every newspaper in the country.
I'm sure you'll get your wish, Jerry. But when your picture has been on page one as many times as mine, you'll get a little tired of it.
They'll be taking your picture also, Joan.
I should like that. I have never seen my picture.
Of course you have, dear. Don't you remember the picture I showed you the day I found you?
But I was only a year old when that picture was taken. I am now 15 years. Surely I do not look the same.
I'll say you don't.
Oh, Joan, dear, that was dangerous, wasn't it?
No, Mother. Uncomfortable, possibly.
Possibly nothing. Uncomfortably, for sure.
Joan, there's something I don't quite understand about these sudden wild swings the stern of the boat makes.
What is that, Captain?
Well, when we're running along at constant speed, the gas combustion chamber makes hardly a sound. But when the stern of this thing whips around out of control, there's a heavy burst that sounds like escaping air. How do you account for that?
Quite easily. When the stern is suddenly thrown around out of balance, and it will be so repeatedly without the stern section, when that occurs, the speed of the rear sections of the boat is so great during the short arc of movement that the gas bursting from the combustion chamber is actually going into a vacuum created by the boat.
No wonder I don't feel so good when those things happen. If we're flapping around fast enough to leave a hole in the water behind us,
Joan, is it safe for me to return to the sleeping quarters and lie down?
Of course, Mother.
Pat, are you ill?
Of course I'm not ill. Only I think I'll rest a little.
You look kind of white around the mouth, Mrs. Gregory. Are you seasick?
Seasick? Oh, not after 15 years on the water in my own boat, but I think I'll go.
What is the matter with Mother?
She is seasick, Joan, though she wouldn't admit it for the world.
What is seasick?
Well, it's something that happens to a lot of people on the water, but, well, it'll never happen to me. Oh!
What's the matter, Jerry?
Well, I think I'll take a little rest, if you don't need me right here now.
Poor Jerry. This is the first time I've ever seen him act like that. Well, Joan, it looks as if you and I are the only two real sailors on the submarine.
But it is so foolish to act as Mother and Jerry are acting. Captain, is there a mist or a fog in this boat?
Why, no, Joan. The air's clear as a bell in here.
That is strange. My vision is impaired. I have never felt just like this before. What could be the matter with me?
Well, I could tell you, Joan, but I'll let you guess. That leaves one good sailor. Joan, you better go back with the others and lie down. If I should happen to find that I'm no stronger than the rest of you, I don't want anyone here to laugh at me.